You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Daniolo, and today my guest is Jordan White, the lead singer of Jane and the Jungle. Jordan will be with me right after this song from the Fervor Records catalog called In the Deep by Broken Bellows here on the Auto D Show. Check it out. And that was In the Deep by Broken Bellows on the Auto D Show from Fervor Records, who is one of our sponsors this evening. And also, another sponsor is TheRecordingArtist.com, where every Wednesday evening, I record bands live online while you get to watch and participate via live chat. You got to check it out. To learn more, visit TheRecordingArtist.com and be sure to watch our companion show on Amazon Prime's streaming service called The Recording Artist. It's kind of awesome. And so is tonight's guest. So let's bring her on, rock and roll singer, lead singer for Jane in the Jungle. It's Jordan White. How are you doing, Jordan?
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. What was your day like today?
Oh, geez, I already forgot what I did. They all kind of seem to roll into the same days.
Is it a pandemic thing or has it always been that way for you?
No, I think it's a pandemic thing. Mm. I can't believe we're already coming up on a year.
I know. It was within the next week or two when they really shut things down here in Arizona a year ago. I was about to go on my honeymoon to Italy and Spain.
Man.
So, well.
Crap. Are you guys going to go?
We're going to plan the trip, but it looks like it'll be another year out still.
Wow.
So it's going to be wild.
It's crazy. Yeah, I remember our last show we did was March, I believe it was the 13th at FACAL. We did the KWSS, I believe the anniversary show.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh my gosh, it's so crazy to think of that.
And then, do you have something on the books now to perform? Do you have any dates coming up?
You know, the only thing that we have are we're just working on some live stream concerts. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we've been inquiring about playing possibly in the summertime or mm-hmm. the fall. But everything is very loose end, and we just really don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're wearing a shirt that says New York. I know you've been spent some time living in L.A. Where are you originally from?
So I'm actually from Phoenix.
Cool.
So North Phoenix, born and grew up here. And then I studied musical theater in L.A. and New York campuses. So I went to the American Musical and Dramatic Academy there. And, yep, graduated musical theater. And that's a big part of what I bring and how the band kind of is the way it is. And my performance is I just really love the performance aspect of mm-hmm. it and how, being a character.
How old were you when you went into musical theater?
Well, it was after high school. So I did musical theater in high school and then did Up With People for a semester. And then I just jumped in. So I was like 18.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have dreams of being on the road with a touring show or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. That was like my ultimate dream. And it still kind of is. I hope maybe one day I could still do the Broadway thing.
You always can. You know, I mean, who was it? Dennis DeYoung from Styx was playing Pontius Pilate in Jesus Christ Superstar when I moved to Arizona in 89. Wow. And I was like, wow, that's kind of trippy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that there's always time for that.
Yeah, I hope so. So right now I kind of found this fun project working with, you know, Jane in the Jungle, and we're just having a great time, kind of randomly kind of stumbled upon it. And
what do you mean by randomly stumbled?
Well, like I said, I was doing the musical theater route, and then during school, my teachers told me, like, hey, Jordan, we just don't really see you going down this path. We don't think you're a leading lady. You don't have the Broadway voice, and quite frankly, we don't think that you know how to be anybody but yourself, which I thought was so weird that they singled me out, and I only had like 30 students in my class. Like, it was uh-huh. very, very tiny, tiny school, and everybody knew everybody, and all the teachers knew everybody very well. And so they put me into writing classes, and so yeah, I was writing.
But as an artist, interestingly, I think that's probably the greatest compliment they could give you as an artist.
Yeah.
Because the problem a lot of young artists have is they never figure out who they are. And they're always copying records they've heard or songs they've heard when they play cover material. And then when they write a song, they're not sure how to approach, how to deliver it.
Yeah, that's
you know?
True.
So they may have been right. You had an identity. Mm-hmm. You knew how you wanted to sing. And they wanted people who would just do whatever they needed to do for the part, and that wasn't your
style.
Yeah,
wow, that's so funny that you say that, because I've never thought of it in that way. Because, of course, at the time when I heard that, it was, like, devastating.
Right. That's like saying, you know what? You shouldn't be here, and we could use that chair.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, do you want to cancel?
Because we'll give you your money back. Here's your ticket.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have given the money back. But they're like, I think you're kind of wasting your money here.
Here's your hat. What's your hurry?
Yeah, so yeah, I did the writing thing. It was kind of odd, but I stayed after class. It was weird because they made you start school at 6 a.m. for a workout class.
Wow.
And then you didn't end until 5 or 6 p.m. And then you'd start your writing class from either 6 or 7. You'd hurry up, like, grab food. And then you'd be there till midnight. And then you'd do it all over again. Like, it was crazy schedule. But they figured that it was good training for if you're in this mm-hmm. creative lifestyle or you're on the road. It's kind of similar where you have to do what you got to do and you have to take care of yourself, get up early, work out, and then you're just doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was kind of rigorous. But long story short, I guess, I was writing and we would go to spit houses. That was part of the project in Hollywood where you would spit your poetry. And I was terrible at it. And it's like rapping. And like could not do it. It was like painful to watch. And finally the teacher was like, okay, Jordan, we won't make you do that. And I was like, there was only one other girl. And it's funny because the only other girl that was with in that class, her name is Summer. And we actually played a show together, I think it was a year and a half ago, in Hollywood at the Study, which was really, really cool for it to like circle back. But yes, so we were like really, really nerdy, writing stuff that he said we could sing. So he's like, why don't you get a guitar and accompany yourself that way? And so my parents got me a guitar for Christmas that year, and I Googled guitar lessons, and so I took lessons from the Shred Mistress in West Hollywood, and she had me within a month. I was playing coffee houses, not very well, but I could support myself with basic chords. And then ever since then, that was just what I did. I was just doing coffee houses, writing songs, and then I moved back here to pretty much moved to Nashville. So to become a songwriter was...
So you moved here to move to Nashville, or you did move to Nashville?
So I moved here to get everything, my ducks in a row, get my job set, figure it out, and then move to Nashville was the goal. And so I got here, got my kind of job here that also had the job in Nashville that I was going to transfer to. And yeah, Brian, the guitar player, went to one of my shows that I had at Cashmere's, and he came up to me afterward, which, by the way, we grew up together since kindergarten. We mm-hmm. went through high school, but never close. We just had kind of different circles, but he ended up coming to that show and came up to me afterward and said, hey, I think it would be fun to see if I could possibly accompany you and maybe we could form a band. And that was the first time I heard of like a band. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, like, sure, let's give it a go. And then like never looked back after that. And mm-hmm. then of course I didn't move to Nashville. I ended up flying there with my dad and we were gonna start looking at apartments and it just didn't feel right. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I just think, you know, I'm gonna do the band thing in Phoenix. Because at the time, Nashville was so, this was like 10 years ago, they were country, we're going to spit on you type thing if you don't do anything but country music. And I wasn't a country singer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was kind of the path that led me to the band in a weird way.
You mentioned going with your dad. Was he musical? Was there music in your family growing up?
Well, yeah. There was him and my aunt grew up doing classical piano. Mm-hmm. So they were really good piano players. And then I think they sang in the church. I think he could probably text me now. He's listening. I think he played some sort of instrument. But my mom says that I get my singing from her side of the family.
Okay.
But yeah, no one was ever that, I don't know that how to explain, it? But I guess some of my ancestors, they did have a piano business. Dad, you can text me the year, mm-hmm. but I think this was like, I don't remember. Okay.
Any brothers or sisters in the family? Or are you
so I'm the oldest child? Of four.
Okay. Cool. So, for you, when did you start in music? I mean, before music theater, were you playing an instrument? Were you singing?
So, I grew up with a speech problem.
Okay.
From a very, very young age when I was learning how to talk. And it actually was easier for me to sing because I had such bad speech. And I remember my mom, or I don't really remember, she tells me this, that she got me this kid karaoke thing that I would play when I was two. And wow. So I was just kind of mumbling, but more so kind of singing phrases. And I just always had like love for singing. And then when I got a little older, I remember I wrote my first song when I was seven at the Girl Scouts. Wow. And it was like this silly song, but it was just kind of always like it ingrained in me that I was the singer and I love singing. And then finally, by the time I think I was 8 or 10, very young, and it was in elementary school, and I was able to sing my first solo. And I was so excited. And I got up on stage and I turned like a tomato, bright red, like panicking, like shaking in my like shoes, and I was terrified, like nothing came out, it was terrible. And I went off stage like so defeated and so sad, and then I was so terrified. And then I wanted to do it again. And so eventually, a little later, maybe a year or whatever, I auditioned to be in the play. Of course, I did not make it. And over time, I kind of got better. But it was many years of just complete stage fright, where I would turn a tomato and like would get shaken up and like could not perform type thing. It was kind of like the Coyote Ugly. Mm-hmm. When that came out, my mom's like, oh my gosh, you're like this girl that needs to perform in the dark because he gets so scared. And
you looked like, as you described it, you looked like you could still feel it.
Yeah, it's that weird, it's just something where you like accomplish your fear and you kind of want to just keep doing it type thing. And my mom put me in voice lessons, I think in middle school through high school. So I was always singing, and then I was in choir. And it took many, many years to shake off that.
Do you remember the first time you did a show where you got through that?
It was one show that I did where I was so embarrassed because I made a fool of myself, that I told myself I was never going to feel that way ever again. And I never did.
That's cool. I think your phone's going off.
Oh, here we go.
I'm going to get some details from Dad.
So my dad says it was in vaudeville in the 20s. Awesome. Great Uncle Eddie White had a very popular New York City big band. And then he said that he played the trombone in high school.
Cool. So that's where some of that came from.
So yeah, no, I always loved singing. It took many, many years to actually sing in front of people. And I grew up doing classically trained voice lessons, which kind of led me down the path to musical theater. But it wasn't until after I took everything I learned and tossed it away and just tried to sing my own voice, which took me years. And that's how I found the voice that I have today.
What brought you into rock and roll as a singer? Because it sounds like musical theater wasn't necessarily a lot of rock and roll.
No.
But your band's pretty hard. So how did you gravitate into that?
I think it was just my love for just performing and being a character. And I think, which musical theater does, but again, it took me many, many years to connect the dots and realize that rock and roll is one of the biggest shows you could put on.
It's theater, all right.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's funny.
And my voice fits right in. And it wasn't like I was trying to be anybody, like you said. It was just the voice that I have. And we don't write any music like anybody else. Like, everyone always asks for our influences. And of course, we love bands, but there's not one band that we try to sound like. It's just, you know, literally us in our practice space, the guys riffing on stuff, and it just kind of comes out.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that as a producer engineer, you know, for most of my adult life, that was one of the biggest problems I had with new artists when they would come in who had never really recorded yet. They would say, here's who we want to sound like. And I would say, no. That's who you want to be like. And they would look at me, what do you mean? I'd say, well, who did they sound like? And they go, nobody. Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you want to be like them, don't sound like them. Sound like yourselves. And you have to learn, you have to find that sometimes. And for a lot of artists, that's a tough thing to find, to kind of find their voice. And when they find those things that are natural, both as writers and performers, it comes down to, well, if that's quirky enough that nobody likes it, tough. That's who you are. And you'll find the niche audience you'll have, you know. Pierce Turner was an artist, a singer out of Ireland who was in New York. The weekend I moved to Phoenix, he was playing the Mason Jar here. I opened up the newspaper. I got to go see a show. I go to the Mason Jar and see this guy, Pierce Turner. I don't know anything about him. He was so weird, so funny. I went out and bought all of his records the next day and just became a huge fan. But he's so strange to an American pop listener that I knew, well, I'll never hear him anywhere else. I'll never hear him on the radio. And sure enough, never, you know. But he found an audience, and I think that's the key. Once you find yourself and can express that with some identity, it's going to resonate as being true, and that's going to capture an audience. And that's really the approach I think artists have to take instead of trying to copy something and aim at some target, mm-hmm. you know. So I love that you say, you know, well, we don't try and sound like anybody, and our influences, yeah, we like music, but...
Oh, thank you. No, I appreciate that you say that, because a lot of people, they don't get it. They're like, really? But come on. They're asking, who did you listen to or who do you get that voice styling from? And it just, it hurts to just like really try to think of somebody. And I'm like, there's just, it's just like, sure, we grew up listening to people, but there's nobody I'm trying to be.
Mm-hmm. I think that comes across in even in the promo photo that you sent me on the stairs mm-hmm. or on the steps where you're forefront and the guys are slightly behind you. I just love that picture. I love everything that that says because your face is not aggressive or flamboyant or theatrical, but your body position is like a panther who just came through the weeds, you know, mm-hmm. very calm, but I'm right in your face. And the guys are behind you. It almost says, don't look at them. Talk to me. It's kind of the vibe of it. It's mm-hmm. very powerful and has a real confidence. I just love that image. I just thought that was just a really, really cool image.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So whoever did that or directed you in that way, that's the, to me, that's the natural state of a unique artist.
Yeah, shout out to James Deke that did that one.
Yeah.
And he was just like, cool. Just hop on there and do whatever you want to do.
That's cool.
It came out great.
Love it. Mm-hmm. You recently went to Detroit to do some recording.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So before we talk about that, how many times have you been in the studio doing recordings?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's definitely I could count on my hands.
Can't really count by albums these days because it's not always about albums anymore.
I mean, probably like 10 or so times.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more.
First time was a little weird, a little tough?
I think the first time I was actually in a studio was with Up With People. We were in some studio in Albuquerque that Mariah Carey did a bunch of stuff there because I remember seeing her records. And we were just with an ensemble. And I think that broke the ice for me because my first time was just mm-hmm. totally just fun and funny and laughing. And then I think the next real serious time I was in a studio. Well, and then we were in the studio at Blue Door Studio here in town. And again, I don't know if you've been there, but super casual. And so it was just this comfortable feeling and family. Anyone could come and it was fun. And then we were at the Salt Mine in 2016, and that was a little more like, okay, we're in like a pretty big studio at that time, and again, you know, just, and we were very prepped for it, so just always about having fun. And I think the coolest studio that I've been into was Capitol Records Studio B, and we mixed our first EP there with Bruce Monocle, and I really wish that we could record there and track. I don't know if you've ever been into mm-hmm. Studio B, but yeah, that was just like, woo, like
cool,
an amazing experience.
Yeah. So tell me why this time you went to Detroit and what was the connection there?
So we went to Detroit because the producer, Chuck Alkazian, he lives there and his studio, Pearl Sound Studios, is in Canton, which is like 15, 20 minutes outside, like really close to Detroit. And we met up with Chuck through our consultants and PR team, who is good friends with him. And Chuck does a lot of, he did Soundgarden, Eminem, Tantric, and just like a list of great bands. But the thing that Chuck does really well is taking a band and, okay, I'm probably not saying this correctly, but Chuck has this kind of raw but polished rock sound that he's good at, and that's what we needed help with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did Animal and Lucky Seven with him, and we really liked that vibe, but we all knew that there was so much more to branch off of that. And so we went back a year later and recorded three songs that we're going to be putting out this year. And we feel like we achieved the goal, which was to make it, you know, more rock, more us, more gritty, and have this strong female presence that people have been like begging us for, which we know we have. It's just like, how do we just
mm-hmm.
get it out there?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've been working on.
Did you have any downtime while you were there? You get to soak in Detroit. I mean, what a
oh my gosh. Well, I mean, there's nothing that I know to do there. And it was like snowy. Yeah. And what was really cool is the drummer that we drum with and play with, he's a Japanese artist that lives in LA. So he came out there. And so on our downtime, we would watch music documentaries. I think we watched like Nirvana, Foo Fighters. We watched just like tons. That's
inspiring while you're in the studio.
So it was inspiring. And then Yuiji is his name. He made us these wonderful Japanese meals. So we kind of just stayed in and bonded. And he made us this like authentic Japanese ramen and this Japanese curry, which I've never had Japanese curry before, which was like amazing.
Cool. Are you a big food fan?
Yeah, I am.
Are you a cook?
No. You'll love to eat it, but you know, can't cook. I can blend a smoothie and that's about it.
That's funny. What are some of your favorite restaurants here in town?
Oh gosh. Well, we really like Il Bosco.
Aren't they great?
Yeah.
That's our pizza sponsor.
We've been craving
it. recordingartist.com. You'll get pizza tomorrow as long as you give me your order.
I have it here.
Okay, good.
So we've been like dreaming about it all week because the pizza is so good. Yeah. We love am I saying this correct? The Valentino?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, there's a bunch of good ones. I'm excited you're looking forward to that. It's great to have Jeff at Il Bosco Pizza on as a sponsor for the show. It's really, really cool. Well, you know what? I'd like to spin another record, give you a second to catch your breath, and then we'll come right back and chat a little bit more, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So we're going to play a tune, another one of the Fervor Records cuts. This is a band called Mail Order Brides, and the song is Bad, Bad, Bad here on the Otto D Show. Check it out.
Live.
And that was Bad, Bad, Bad from the Mail Order Brides here on Otto D Show, where my guest tonight is Jordan White, lead singer of Jane and the Jungle. And you mentioned, Jordan, that you started writing your first song, I think, when you were 7 years old. So I imagine you've written quite a number of songs by now.
Yeah.
They're probably a little more interesting than that
one. Yeah, my first song was titled Green, Green Grass of Fire.
That's a rock.
And the moms still to this day know the song.
That's funny.
Because it was kind of catchy. It was weird.
That's cool that your first song was catchy. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And when you write now, do you have a particular process? I mean, you play an instrument. You play piano a little, play guitar a little. So do you pick up an instrument when you start to write, or do you just come up with melodies in your head, or how does
so
it start?
So I definitely used to, for sure. That was definitely how I started writing songs. And then Brian and I collaborated, and we would sometimes spend 8 hours dissecting a song and coming up with a song. And it was just always a fun process. And then currently what we've been doing and what we have been doing for the last like handful of years is the guys bring in a riff, or we kind of just create a riff together, and it's just very free form and organic, and it's just blurts out. So I don't have much time. I'll have my, I either do it on my phone or I do it in a journal, and I just write real quick, and that's how we've been writing it. It's actually kind of hard, but it works when you have something that comes really fast to you. You probably know this as a songwriter. It just, it's weird, but it clicks. So that's our method that we've been using.
Mm-hmm. Cool. It's hard to depend on a process that demands you do it quick. Do you go back and review and kind of edit sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes like I'll think about it and change stuff. And then sometimes I'll have something that will just come to me randomly, and I'll write it down, or I'll put a voice memo in. But for the most part, they're all, and the guys will say this too, it's very, very weird when we're all
just
vibing and it just comes out.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. It's kind of meant to be. Well, I also wanted to ask you about something else kind of unrelated, but I heard that you had, and you tried out and got onto American Idol at some level. So you had the great American Idol experience.
Yeah.
What was that all like?
So I believe I was the oldest contestant. It's kind of funny. But I think now I appreciate the experience because I've had time to dissect it, just because it's just such a, I don't know how to explain it. But it was something that I grew up watching the very first season. I was in middle school, and it was funny because Mrs. Peters at Shea Middle School, for our homework, we actually had to watch American Idol for choir class. And I wouldn't say it was intimidating, but it was just something, a part of our culture, especially my age. And so it's something that I would never have done, really, just because I just don't know how you could take the rejection. In my mind, I was like, you know, American Idol is this. I'm this. I don't really fit. If they hate me and shred me apart, like, I don't know how people, like, continue on from that. Like, that is so heartbreaking. And I don't think I can handle it. And so, lo and behold, I was, like, almost was at the cutoff to you're almost too old. And I was nominated for it. And they're like, you know, you're nominated. You have a slot to like meet some pretty high up judges. Would you like want to attend? So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll attend. And I kept telling the, because they said that I could do my original music to audition with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. And so when I was there, I'm like, you know, I'm an original artist. I am in a band. Would it be okay to showcase original music? And I think it would be really cool. Something that is lacking from the show is that people don't, they're not anybody like unique. Like they're not, you don't know who they are as an artist. They don't write music. You don't see that.
Right.
I'm like, can I, if I'm going to be a part of this American Idol thing, can I be an advocate and inspire people to write their own music and sing in their own voice? Because to me, American Idol, especially nowadays, seems just like really good karaoke singers. And I actually said this to the judges. And this is not like the famous judges, by the way. You have to go through many different steps.
Yeah.
And they loved it. And I was actually kind of surprised because I'm like, okay, if I throw this out there, there's probably a good chance they're going to like cut me real quick. And then that will be that. And at least I put my 2 cents in. And everyone at my shows can stop telling me to apply for, or, you know, do American Idol. So like, no, we love that. That's exactly what we need. So I actually was surprised to hear them say that. I'm like, okay, all right, well, then as long as you kind of understand who I am, then great, I guess I'll be down for this. And this was very new in the American Idol, the Disney version, because ABC had taken over from Fox. And so in my mind, I'm like, I guess this is different. And they told me that too. They're like, oh, this is a different way than that we're doing things. I'm like, okay, great. So I did many, many auditions, and to the point where I got up to the Katy Perry and Lionel Richie and Luke Bryan.
So when was this then?
So this was 2018.
A couple years ago.
November. And my whole family was there. And what was really, really weird is that they kind of, I didn't want to say like treated me as a front runner, but they did. And you can kind of tell like who will be ranked based on certain weird things. But what's really, really odd is they had this whole camera crew, like in the day of the judges where you meet Ryan Seacrest and everybody. And this camera crew was like following me all around, like almost to the point where it was like embarrassing, because first of all, I don't know why they're following me around. Second of all, like all the other people are wondering why the camera crew is following me around. People are coming up to me asking, who are you? Why are they following you around? I was going to the bathroom. They're following me around.
They'd already decided that your story was the one they were going to tell. You just didn't know what story they were going to tell.
And I didn't really have a good, like, that, I don't know. They probably, I have no idea, because you really never know what they're even thinking. So I'm just there, and my family could even tell you it was weird. And again, I'm the oldest person there. I had my show look on. I woke up at like 3 a.m., got professional makeup done, hair, because in my training, it's like, you know, I want to look the part, and I want to show them where I'm at in my career, and I'm doing things, and who I am. And so finally, I get in there, and, you know, I'm all ready to go. They tell you, you know, what songs to do at that point. So they're all like, you can only do the ones that you get checked. And I did my thing, and their faces were just horror.
What did you sing?
Terrified. So I sang a clip of our song, Concrete Jungle.
Okay.
And they were like, white as a ghost, like terrified. And they were like, and then that was the first time I'm like, whoa, this is not going good. And they just like cut into me, and they're like, you know, you sound like Heart without a heart. And that was the most weirdest, like, quite frankly, made me feel extremely uncomfortable watching you do that. And they were just going off and off and off on me. And finally, after, you know, I was bawling my eyes out at this point, it was just like every weird thing, and I was just in shock. But finally, Lionel Richie was sweet enough, because I was just highly confused at this point. He was sweet enough to just be like, you know, Jordan, this is just not your path. This is not for you. This, what American Idol is, in a nutshell, is an artist that you has never performed before. They, you know, they don't know who they are, but they can blossom and become a star on TV in front of America, and that's what it is. But you come in here today, in your act, your show, what you already have, it's just apples and oranges. And then I kind of was able to walk away with some peace after that. But yeah. I just wondered why they dragged me along so many months.
Because when you said what you said to the first judges, they knew you were wrong for the show, that you could never win, because American Idol isn't about artists, it's about singers. And they're going to change you into whatever they want you to change into until you win, you know. So for you to come in and say you had a voice, it's like you're just telling us you don't fit. And I'm sure they all looked at each other and said, this would make great TV, you know, because there's no way she's going to win. Let's pass her up the line.
Yeah.
And then they were told, here comes a girl who she's going to tell you what she's going to do, which is opposite of the show.
Yeah, no, you're right. And so, they were following me. And like, they took that
opportunity.
Bathroom.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They knew they were going to take that opportunity to explain to you and to the world, we're not looking for artists. We're looking for singers who want to be artists. They don't know who they are. That's what we're
looking for. Well,
of course,
they would never air that.
You know.
But then they had Ryan Seacrest, which they don't have Ryan Seacrest for everybody, by the way. And I didn't think he would be there, but he ran to see.
That's because they might have aired it. They didn't know they weren't going to. That comes down to
the audience. Well, they wanted air, but I kind of have a feeling of what I know why they didn't air it. So Ryan Seacrest comes out. I didn't think I'd see him. So by the time I come out, I'm like, oh my God. Like, cry, like, terrible. And because I didn't think he would be there. And he's there and he's like, what happened? I'm like, oh my God, they said, I'm just too big. I'm too much. I'm just too much out there. And I don't know, it was weird. And then of course they got like five shots of me walking off into the sunset. They're like, oh, can you do like crying off into the sunset shot? I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But I think the final straw, which is why they didn't air my thing, is they do the interview with you, and they kept saying, aren't you pissed at American Idol? Don't you hate Katy Perry right now? And they really wanted to get it out of me of kind of what I thought, and like they wanted to see me angry and upset.
Right.
And I was just like, no, you know, I really respect her, and I'm a big fan. And that's all I just kept saying. And then I think they were just so confused with my footage that it didn't make any sense.
That's what I mean. They planned to air it, but it just didn't come together in the edit.
No.
That's why. And
so I'm so glad they did not air it.
Thanks to you.
Because now I'm able to like speak freely. And I support people who do it. I have friends that have done it, and they, you know, they've done really, really well.
What a crazy experience, though.
But yeah, now I can look back and have a fun story.
Well, and it's show business, right? So there's the show and there's the business. And they're not even in the music business. American Idol, it's television business that happens to be about music. Mm-hmm. But you can turn American Idol off and you'll know what happened. You can just watch it, turn the sound off and just watch it. And you see the people performing and struggling. You see the judges' faces. You know everything that's going on without hearing a thing. It's really not about the music. You know, so it's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. What an experience to have, though.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a blessing in disguise that they cut me when they did, because a lot of weird stuff happens if you get that first golden ticket. It's weird. Well, because then it's like you have to check off if you can perform again. Mm-hmm. And it's just all this crazy stuff that I was willing to do, you know, under certain circumstances, but I'm just so glad I didn't have to, you know, make that decision.
Yeah, kind of tough. Speaking of decisions, we have to make one. We're running out of time, and we have enough time to talk about one more thing. And I think you mentioned before that you've got like an online show coming up.
Yeah, so we are doing a live show on Twitch on Spin Magazine's page, and that will be on March 11th at, I believe, 5 p.m. Arizona time. I'm going to post the details, I think, tomorrow on our Facebook page.
Okay, say that again. It's a Twitch show mm-hmm. on Spin Magazine's webpage.
On Spin Magazine's profile on Twitch.
Oh, okay.
I know, it's kind of weird. This is our first time using Twitch. So we'll be
How'd you land that? Sounds like a pretty cool gig.
Yeah, it was with our PR team that we use, Unleashed Music. And yeah, they're partners with, you know, Spin, and cool. They got us the gig.
Awesome. And that's going to be on March 11th. And is it, you say it's a live event. How long is it?
Well, I think we'll do like a 30 to 40 minute set.
Okay. And then is that something that remains available to be seen, or is it done when it's done?
That's what I really don't know. But we are going to try to do post it on our YouTube page.
Cool. And if people want to hunt you down and check you out, what's the best way to find you?
Oh, we are on, well, first you could Google us and a bunch of pages pop up, or you can find us on Spotify, Apple Music. Instagram's a really good way to connect with us, with kind of our Insta stories and see day-to-day, and Facebook.
Cool. Do you have a website?
Yep, janeinthejungle.com, and it's Jane, the letter in the jungle, like guns in roses.
Cool. You know what? I'm online trying to sneak in a song, and the play button won't go on Reverb Nation, so that's too bad. Sing me a song. Not everybody. That's a horrible thing to do to somebody, isn't it?
Oh, we'll be singing a song tomorrow, by the way. You should say a little bit about that.
That's true. You and your band are going to be the featured artist tomorrow evening at therecordingartist.com, where, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I record bands every week. And this is a two-hour recording session where at 7 o'clock we go live and the band gets to find out what song they're going to record. They don't even know until our head of A&R tells them which of their tunes that they're going to record. And Jordan and the boys have given us three new tunes they haven't recorded yet. They're demos, so we're going to find out which song we're going to cut. Then I have 2 hours to produce this track with these guys in front of our audience, who are also live chatting with us. And then on Thursday, we do a two-hour mix live online, and then the song's posted on our site forever. And the 15-minute video gets cut out of that to live on the site forever. And some of our footage ends up on Amazon Prime in our television show, The Recording Artist. So we're going to be doing that tomorrow. And I think that's going to be a blast.
Yeah, we're really excited for that.
We got to come by to hang out at the rehearsal and hear you guys jamming. And that was exciting. So I think it's going to be cool. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah, we're so excited.
Do you know which song you hope you're going to do?
Oh, gosh. Oh, it's between Drifter or...
Queen of the...
Lost Where You Are.
Lost Where You Are? Okay. We'll see.
We'll see. Maybe it'll be Queen of the Losers. But I think there's still time to sign up and do cast your vote, right?
Yeah, you can vote until 3 p.m. tomorrow. And if you can't make the show tomorrow, it's a monthly membership. You can join for $3.99 a month. The show will remain up for a full week if you can't make it on Wednesday night. But every Wednesday, we have another band. It's a lot of fun. We'll see you there tomorrow, Jordan.
Yep, I'll be there.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care now.